two out of my three leagues, we get together for a weekend. So as many guys as that can come, they come. It's usually a couple guys can't make it, but that year, or at least last year when I put it in the book, we were in Scottsdale for the draft, and we went to this pool, and you know, there was some shenanigans at the pool. I won't ruin it, but I did get punched in the face in the pool by some drunk dude. It's some interesting testosterone levels at those things. I mean, at that pool party, off in a little cabana area, was another group of guys who was doing their own draft, and they had hired a couple of girls. I don't know if they were cocktail waitresses or working girls or what they were, but they were standing there in bikinis and high heels and putting the stickers on their draft board. And so it's become kind of this thing that a lot of guys go and do. Of course, that was not what we normally do. We're not usually out at the pool in Scottsdale. This year we went to San Luis Obispo, back to where we went to school, and we did it there and went to the old stomping grounds. But it seems like it's a really good opportunity for friends to get back together, friends who might otherwise just kind of lose contact.
I want to ask you, I read the excerpt that was on Deadspin, and you were talking about the movie Concussion, and one of the things that I noticed, because I did a couple pieces on that, and there'd been that New York Times article that said, oh, you know, because of the Sony hacks and the leaks, they really kind of were soft on the NFL, and it didn't feel that way at all when I actually saw the movie, which I saw you said sort of the same thing. It seemed like it was really kind of harsh on the NFL, and I was curious to see how, you know, I mean, just like the sort of societal reaction was going to be to that. It doesn't seem like it's changed much. I thought maybe more people would be more wary of CTE specifically and concussions in general, but it seems like that all kind of died out. Have you noticed any real change since the film?
No change, and the film didn't do very well at the box office at all. It seems like the public appetite is not there to listen to that story. People don't want to feel bad about liking the sport. And so I think the people who are already aware of the story, who are already interested in kind of the effects and the repercussions on the brain of the game, they were open to it. They wanted to go see it. But I'd say the majority of football fans, they don't want to know. They don't want to know what goes on. They don't want to know where the trail of blood leads. They don't want to know what happens after the fact. You know, these guys are on the field. Their helmets are on. Their faces are covered. You don't know who they are as individuals. That's kind of the point. You got 22 guys on the field, 11 on 11 at all times. Those guys, it doesn't matter who they are. As long as they're hitting hard, as long as they're running fast, as long as they're willing to make the ultimate sacrifice on that field, people are going to cheer for them. The moment they're not, or the moment their bodies start to break down, they don't want to see it anymore, and they don't want to confront where exactly it goes from there, because it might change the way they feel about a sport that's become part of their lives and a really important part of their lives.
And to kind of follow up with that, Nate, I wanted to ask you, too. You had, during your career, you dislocated your shoulder multiple times. You separated both of them. You broke your tibia. I can go down the list of injuries you sustained. Yet you were deemed healthy enough to play several times, it seems like. Do you think the protocol amongst training staffs and players have changed in the past couple of years? Or do you still think the take-your-word-for-it approach is still out there?
Yeah, it's still kind of swallow it and be as tough as you can and don't let them know when you're hurting. Get out there at all costs. From an individual perspective as a player, I know that if I'm too hurt to play and I don't play this game, somebody else is going to play in my place. If he plays better than me, I may never get back on the field again. There's a really small window for guys to be able to carve out a career in the NFL. And so football from its lowest level is about being tough. It's about never showing them when you're hurt. Yes, sir, may I have another? And if these guys, by the time they make it to the NFL, they're the best at doing that. So they're not going to tell you when they're hurt. And when you talk about concussions and concussion protocol, it's very difficult to diagnose that because players have been dealing with kind of being, you know, getting their bell rung or being dinged since they were kids. That's part of football. You hit with your head. Sometimes that happens. The orthopedic stuff, I mean, it's just inevitable. You're just going to get snapped. You're going to get stretched to the limit. You're going to break eventually. 100% of football players get hurt. I think what's most important is that the healthcare staff or the training staff treat these individual injuries as individual patients and not cogs to the machine, which is the team. And, you know, you'll hear all these coaches. I was just listening to an interview with Bill Belichick this morning, and he said, we're going to do what's best for the football team regarding this guy's injury. Well, how about doing what's best for the individual who's injured and not what's best for the football team? The problem is that team doctors and training staff are also doing what's best for the football team instead of what's best for the individual. You know, they took the Hippocratic Oath. They're sworn to take care of the patient, but too often that doesn't happen in the NFL.
So that kind of dovetails into what I was going to ask you next, which is, I don't know if you read the book NFL Confidential that came out last year or earlier this year. It was written by a player, and it was, you know, supposed to be full of all these big revelations. And really, I think as someone who covers sports every day, there wasn't anything that shocked me or surprised me except for one thing, which I don't even know that it was supposed to be that shocking, but it was how prevalent the sort of the Toradol usage was, and how it was just used as like basic pain management, like weekly pain management, when it's like a really nasty drug that really is not supposed to be applied that way. I know you have been speaking a lot to using marijuana for pain management, but what was your experience with Toradol like, and was it as prevalent when you were still playing? Was it treated, you know, as something that was just an everyday sort of pain relief option for players?
Yeah, it was around when I played. I relied on it the last couple of years I played before every game. The older you get playing professional football, the more your body starts to fall apart, and you need these kinds of things, or at least you think you do, to get on the field. And if you're nursing some kind of injury during the week, let's say you're still practicing but you're going in for treatment, you're seeing the team doctors, you're seeing the trainers, they'll let you know that you should come in the night before the game and get a shot of Toradol. And so originally I was introduced to it probably in 2007 when I was dealing with some injuries, and I came to rely on it. And the night before the game, after our last team meeting, we'd all kind of meet in this hotel ballroom and line up, and two of the doctors would inject it into our bud and then put a Band-Aid on it, and we were off. And it allowed us to wake up the next morning with relatively pain-free and feel good on game day. But it's a very dangerous, powerful drug, and it masks the severity of an injury you might have, especially a brain injury. So if you were to get a brain injury, you wouldn't feel it, and it also thins your blood out, so it would bleed even worse. It causes a lot of internal issues, digestive problems, liver problems. I mean, it does a lot. And in my experience, as far as dealing with the pain and dealing with traumatic injuries, I found that medical marijuana, I call it medical marijuana, I was not getting it from a doctor, but I was using it as a medicine, I believe, and it helped me stay off a lot of the pills that become a product of that environment, too. I mean, any injury you have, you're being handed a bottle of pills, anti-inflammatories as well, pain pills. They're prevalent, and they turn guys into addicts, and they eat up their stomach. And one of the things I've been talking about is allowing these guys some more options to treat the injuries that they have. I mean, half the states in the union allow medical marijuana for the people of the state. I think football players should be afforded the same opportunity to treat the injuries that they have.
All right, last question for me, Nate, and thank you so much for joining Noah and I today. I'm going to switch it up here a little bit and ask you about daily fantasy football, DraftKings, FanDuel. Are you playing that as well as along with your season-long leagues?
No, I don't do that. It's not about money for me, and to me that's like, you know, an online thing that I don't understand. There's algorithms, there's probabilities. The people who are winning on those sites are people who've figured out the algorithms and who run like 200 or 300 games at once and take advantage of chumps like me who decide to throw $100 in the pot.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so I don't play that stuff. And I also think it's kind of a shady enterprise. You know, you read the backstory as to how that came to be with some counterterrorism bill and excluding fantasy football from an online gambling ban. And, you know, there were lobbyists involved in Washington, and the NFL invested in some of these, and ESPN invests in them, and basically steering gambling money right back into their own pockets. And using these guys' likeness, their names, their health, their injuries. I mean, you got guys like Adam Schefter tweeting out medical reports that he finds at hospitals. I mean, there is no adherence to HIPAA laws in the world of football. Team betting already did that, but fantasy football cements it even further, where we feel like we have access to these men's health records. I think that's pretty problematic, so I don't really get involved in the daily fantasy stuff.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that lawsuit shakes out, the especially the Jason Pierre-Paul thing, and that should have some impact, I imagine, on the future of not just the people putting fantasy dollars down, but also, you know, just the way that we handle medical information in general. So
yeah, I hope so. I think these guys deserve that. You know, I mean, I think it's dangerous to kind of have the industry speculating about somebody's health and someone's injuries and, you know, creating a timeline for return. And it puts a lot of psychological pressure on these guys who are already in great shape, really strong, really capable athletes, but you put it in their head that their entire self-worth is based on what they do on the field. They're going to rush back on the field and do permanent damage.
All right, Nate, thank you so much for joining Noah and I. Once again, the new book is Fantasy Man, a former NFL player's descent into the brutality of fantasy football. Nate, thank you so much once again for joining us. Really good stuff, man.